Indian Lake, WXLQ Bristol, Vermont, and WNYV Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Wednesday, March 13th. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Democrats in the state legislature have released counterproposals to Governor Kathy Hochul's budget. They want to try an ambitious affordable housing plan, raise taxes on wealthier residents, and restore cuts to school aid.
Ice coverage on the Great Lakes reached a historic low this winter, which will impact people, animals, and the shoreline.
And since late January, a man from Malone has been using a high-tech drone to search for missing dogs.
Come here, Will. Come on.
She's going to go to him. Just, there you go. There you go.
I enjoy the challenge of trying to find, you know, a specific animal out there in the woods.
Oh my God, it worked.
It's a busy weekend for athletes turned stage performers at North Warren Central School ahead of their spring musical.
All of that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by St. Lawrence Nurseries, Potsdam, accepting orders now through April 12th for cold hardy fruit and nut trees. Details at slngrow.com. And Mount Orthotic and Prosthetic Services, a full-service practice committed to providing care for patients of all ages with offices in Lake Placid, Plattsburgh, and Malone. Details and referrals at mountainonp.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. Democrats in the state legislature have released counterproposals to Governor Hochul's budget. Karen DeWitt reports the Assembly and Senate want to restore reductions to school aid, embark on an ambitious affordable housing program, and raise taxes on the rich.
The Senate and Assembly budgets would add $1.2 billion to schools and end Governor Hochul's plan to make changes in the way school aid is distributed. Hochul wants to eliminate what's known as Hold Harmless, a provision that says no school district can receive less money than it did the previous year. Her plan would result in about half of the state's school districts getting less money than they did last year.
So good afternoon, everyone.
Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins at a news conference says she agrees with the governor that the method for distributing school monies, known as foundation aid, needs to be updated. But she says simply changing one part of the formula, like ending Hold Harmless, doesn't make sense and is unfair to the schools.
Things need to be updated. And when you just take one piece of an outdated formula and not the whole piece, you don't always get the results that you want.
The Senate and Assembly want to fund a $1 million study that the State Education Department would conduct. The goal would be to identify ways to update the formula, which partly relies on data from the year 2000 and was last revised in 2007. Both houses are also proposing an affordable housing plan. Part of it would model a new initiative on the mid-20th century Mitchell-Lama program. The plan would also renew a tax break for developers who include affordable housing in their projects and include a goal of stronger tenant protections. The Senate and Assembly also want to raise taxes on individual New Yorkers and businesses whose annual income is more than $5 million. An additional tax surcharge would be levied on those earning more than $25 million a year. Senate Finance Committee Chair Liz Krueger says the increases would give New York $1.1 billion more dollars in tax revenue.
It's a very small number of New Yorkers, and frankly, the amount of tax difference for them when they hold it up on their overall income and their tax base will not be significant for any of them either, because we are talking about the 1% of the 1%.
Hochul pushed back on some of the legislature's plans. She defended her cuts to schools, saying they follow 2 years of record spending on school districts and that enrollment is dropping. Hochul panned the legislature's idea for a commission to reexamine how school aid is distributed.
That is how you would define kicking a can down the road.
Hochul says she's open to the ideas on housing, but she says she hadn't heard of the initiative that lawmakers are calling Mitchell-Lama 2.0 until Monday evening. She says she's willing to study it, saying that the state desperately needs more housing.
Walking away from this session without doing something on building more housing will not be acceptable to me.
The governor called the proposal to raise taxes on the wealthy and businesses a non-starter. Hochul says she believes the budget can be finished, mostly, before the Easter holidays begin on March 29th. She says she's open to agreeing on an outline of the budget and then coming back after the holiday to approve the bills.
If we can get to agreements, get this settled, even if it's a handshake before and then come back later and pass it the following week, that's all on the table.
But Hochul says there are no guarantees that will happen. The budget is due April 1st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
A Jefferson County corrections officer has been suspended with pay after an incident last year. According to the Watertown Daily Times, police allege Jonathan Baker used unnecessary force against a victim, then filed the false account. Baker also allegedly gave a false statement and a use of force report about the incident to avoid disciplinary action. Baker has been charged with offering a false instrument for filing in the first degree and official misconduct. The sheriff's office started to investigate the incident in December, but transferred the case to the Watertown Police Department. Baker was issued a ticket to appear in a Watertown city court next month.
Franklin County's undersheriff was terminated this past November after a lawsuit accused him of sexually assaulting a jail inmate in 1999. The Adirondack Daily Enterprise reports months before Undersheriff Bruce Barney was fired, a woman filed a lawsuit against Franklin County and the Sheriff's Department. In it, she accuses Barney of raping her while she was being transferred to the Franklin County Jail in October 1999. Barney was a corrections officer at the time. The woman sued under the now expired Adult Survivors Act. The law allowed victims of sexual violence to sue after the statute of limitations had lapsed. The county and Barney denied the allegations. Franklin County Sheriff Jay Cook says he doesn't believe the allegations, but said it was best to part ways.
Ice coverage on the Great Lakes reached an historic low this winter. That's according to a new report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Catherine Wheeler reports the low ice affects everything from animals and people to the shoreline.
NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory said the winter began with warm temperatures, and that slowed ice formation. Then there weren't enough cold days in January to make the ice coverage grow. This year, ice levels peaked in the third week of January, with 15 to 20% coverage across all of the Great Lakes. Historically, it peaks in late February or early March, with about 53% coverage. The Great Lakes Lab says ice levels hadn't been that low in February since they began collecting records in the 1970s. As of this week, there's no ice on Lake Ontario and only a little in the far northern Great Lakes. Water from the lakes flows out through the St. Lawrence River and into the Atlantic Ocean. The St. Lawrence has had little ice this year, too.
It has been an odd year, to say the least.
That's Spencer Bussler. He's the assistant director for the Thousand Islands Land Trust. He says the ice is a buffer between the fluctuating surface and water temperatures, especially in shallow waters.
So without that coverage, there's more of a drastic swing, and that alters the behavior of a lot of the animals that are in our bays and wetlands.
There hasn't been much ice downriver in Akwesasne either. Tony David is the director of the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe's Environment Division. He says he's concerned about how the lack of ice can drive more shoreline erosion.
We're seeing more wind-driven events and wave events, which could start the processes of land erosion sooner than we usually see. So from my perspective, we could be dealing with more land loss along the St. Lawrence River and in some of the tributaries.
He says the warmer weather this time of year, when it's usually cold, can also trigger biological events. Fish might migrate upriver and spawn much sooner than normal, and that could influence how successful the offspring are at surviving. David says the lack of ice also affects people. Not only does it impact communities along the river who depend on tourism from ice fishing and winter sports, it's also changing how people get around in Akwesasne and the islands sprinkled through the St. Lawrence River.
A lot of people use those islands year-round, and those ice roads they use to access the islands, they were pretty much non-existent this year, or if they were, certainly was not a very safe condition. And that's just a matter of public safety for us. You know, for generations, we've depended on ice roads to travel the St. Lawrence River, to access fishing locations, and to access the islands.
David says climate change is going to disrupt a lot of things we're used to, and communities have to start planning for how we can adapt. Catherine Wheeler, North Country Public Radio.
Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 11 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, it's spring musical season at many high schools, and it's also the boys' high school basketball finals this weekend. How North Warren High School gives students the chance to perform on the court and on the stage. Coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Evan Veenstra in Gananoque, Ontario. Northern Light is supported by North Country Children's Museum, Potsdam, with hands-on and minds-on exhibits and programs for children 12 and under and their families. Open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 to 5, northcountrychildrensmuseum.org. And Ford Dealer Presentation, hosting a public reenactment of 18th century maple sugaring on Saturday, March 16th from noon to 2:30. Details at fort1749.org.
When dogs get lost in the North Country, they can wander deep into the woods, far away from humans, very quickly. Since late January, a man from Malone has been using a high-tech drone to look for missing pets and uploading search videos online. The drone flies high above the backcountry, giving him a bird's-eye view. Lucy Grindin has more.
Retired state police investigator Chad Taverney has been exploring the outdoors his whole life.
I grew up, you know, deer hunting and stuff like that. So, like, I just, like, I kind of have, like a natural love of, like, wilderness and animals.
Back in 2015, Taverney started getting into drones. He'd fly them around the region, capturing images from mountains and forests, especially of animals like deer, turkey, raccoons, and coyotes. Late last year, he bought a fancy new thermal imaging drone. Then, this January, he realized he could use it to find people's lost dogs. He got a commercial drone license from the FAA, and he started his own business, North Country Drone Search and Recovery.
I enjoy the challenge of trying to find, you know, a specific animal out there in the woods.
One of Taverney's latest searches was for Rory the Golden Doodle. He got a call from a family near Watertown. Their dog, Rory, had run away from their camp in the afternoon. She was gone all night and was still missing the next day. Taverney drove 2 hours to get there. Then he launched his drone into the air.
You get zoomed out here a little bit. I gotta see what's going on.
First, he flew the drone over some woods for about half an hour. He found dozens of deer and some porcupines, but no sign of Rory. Here's how the drone works. It crisscrosses the sky just below 400 feet. Meanwhile, its thermal camera scans the landscape for heat. It creates a live black and white temperature map. Topographical features look dark, but the body heat of an animal shows up as a bright white orb. Finally, Taverny sees a lone white spot, glowing like a Patronus from Harry Potter. As soon as he finds her, he gives the GPS coordinates to her owner. They stay on the phone together so Taverny can tell him what to do.
Rory! She's looking your way.
Rory!
Yeah, she is going to be pretty much straight to your left now.
Rory's lost in a swampy area with a pond that's frozen over.
Shoot, she is going across that ice.
She hesitates on the ice. She moves agonizingly slowly. But she makes it across safely and keeps following her owner's voice.
Come here, girl. Come on.
She's going to go to him. Yeah, I would just... There you go. There you go. Yes. Oh, my God, it worked.
Taverny charges $300 per search, plus reimbursement for travel. He's driven up to 4 hours each way for searches, and he's trying to make back the cost of his drone. He spent about $15,000 on it. But he says this business is about more than the money for him.
The reward to, like, see, you know, how happy, you know, a dog owner is to get their dog back, who they thought, like, legitimately was lost and possibly going to be dead soon. It is a very rewarding thing to know that, you know, you flying your drone around just pretty much saved that dog's life.
And he loves doing it.
As a retired person, I can spend 11 hours of my time sitting at home doing not much else, or I can spend that 11 hours traveling for the day and, you know, trying to go find somebody's dog and having fun for several hours flying my drone. Like, to me, it's like a win-win situation.
Taverny says the thermal drone is great for searching all kinds of remote country. In less than 2 months, he's rescued 7 dogs, some of them days after they'd gone missing. He plans to keep helping people in the region find their 4-legged friends. Lucy Grindin, North Country Public Radio.
Both of the North Country's Division I women's hockey teams will play in the NCAA National Tournament. The St. Lawrence University Saints travel to Madison, Wisconsin for a first-round match tomorrow night at 8 against Penn State. The winner will play the number 2 seed Wisconsin Badgers. The Clarkson University Golden Knights are the fourth seed in the tournament. They'll play a quarterfinal match at home in Potsdam Saturday afternoon at 2 against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. The Frozen Four is the weekend of March 22nd in Durham, New Hampshire.
A pair of Clarkson University students have completed a children's book about depression and anxiety. According to a press release, occupational therapy students Shelby Dufresne of Plattsburgh and Michaela Farella of Queens wrote and illustrated the book Finding My Rainbow. It follows a little girl named Lulu who goes on a journey to identify the people in her support system who help her chase away storm clouds. Dufresne has already started writing another children's book about autism. She says she hopes to find a publisher for her book soon.
In the heart of the Adirondacks, a small town has consistently made big waves in ski racing. It's even produced 4 Olympians. WAER's Nate Harrington finds out what makes Old Forge and its ski club so special.
Erica Murray says she loves hearing spectators and competitors wonder why her skiers take up so much space on winners' podiums.
It is fun when you go to these races and they say, Polar Bear, who? Who is that? Who are you guys? Like, where are you from? You know?
Murray is the president of the Polar Bear Ski Club, which practices on Macaulay Mountain in Old Forge. The local population is less than 2,000, so to have 4 Olympians who are polar bears is impressive. The mountain is municipally owned, and that, says Murray, gives the local school unique privileges.
Imagine riding the bus to the mountain every day after school, you know, and imagine a town making sure your kids all have free ski passes so that they can get on that mountain every day.
And, she says, it cost at most $225 for an entire family of polar bears for life. That's much cheaper than most ski clubs and includes fees for coaches like Janine Faniff, who is also one of the many parents involved in the club.
And for any family that can't afford the fees, we have scholarships. We have people in the community that will sponsor a kid, and we will help get them equipment as well.
It's that kind of spirit that makes the Polar Bear Ski Club so special, says her daughter and former Olympian, Maddie Faniff.
I think there's a lot of clubs and organizations around the country for skiing that can kind of be a little bit intimidating and intense.
But not the polar bear, says the biathlete, who's also the fourth Olympian this mountain has produced since 1960. Faniff was in Pyeongchang in 2018, but says her town has been supporting skiers long before she hit these slopes.
For some reason there, and it hasn't changed much, is that skiing is just like integrated into the culture there, and it's just such a part of the community, and everyone understands it.
Faniff says she's excited to see who the next polar bear Olympian will be.
That was WAER's Nate Harrington reporting in Old Forge.
You are listening to Northern Lights here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, balancing athletics and theatrics in one Southern Adirondack High School. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note with a profile of the glamorous reddish heron. That's coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Weather Service says partly cloudy today, maybe an isolated shower, but relatively mild. Highs ranging from the low 50s to near 60 this afternoon with light winds out of the east, southeast. Lows around 30 tonight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, mild, highs near 50 in the afternoon. And Friday and Saturday, at this point, mostly cloudy skies, light rain possible, highs in the 40s on Friday. Don't worry, it's going to get cold again. Highs near 40 on Saturday and Sunday, and then highs in the 30s into the early part of next week. But today, partly cloudy, a scattered shower, and a high in the 50s near 60. Right now in Canton, clouds, 33 degrees.
It's a big weekend in Glens Falls. The city will host this year's high school boys basketball state championship starting tomorrow night. It's also a busy weekend for student athletes and their families and friends. Many schools are juggling spring schedules to accommodate student athletes, academics, and activities, and that includes the annual spring musical.
Yeah, students at North Warren High School in Chestertown will present the musical The Drowsy Chaperone Junior this Friday and Saturday. Dozens of junior and senior high school students will be on stage and backstage, including Zachary Kramer. He is a senior playing the lead in the show. He's also a key player on the boys' varsity basketball team at the state finals. The show also includes two members of the school's cheerleading team, Gabby Smith and Abigail Scorzelli, who will also split their time between the court in Glens Falls and the stage in Chestertown. I caught up with North Warren music teacher Andrew Purrier, the show's director. He told me The Drowsy Chaperone Jr. is an adaptation of the Tony Award-winning musical comedy. It opens with the main character, again, played by Zachary Kramer, sharing music from his favorite record.
He plays for the audience this record of a musical called The Drowsy Chaperone, which is his favorite musical. The musical comes to life in his apartment, and he narrates that for us. We also, on a side note, we have a lot of juniors especially playing featured roles this year. We have a very strong junior class here. And we've been working with a lot of different departments here to make this, you know, happen, whether it be the tech and the woodworking department for building set pieces, the art department for the poster designs, you know, working with coaches and the athletic director to make sure students can do both sports and the musical here. It's really a giant team effort. I have also had a lot of help from parents. And like I said, it's just a huge team effort. And Friday, March 15th is our first show at 7. And then we have two Saturday shows the following day at 3:30 and 7:30. And there's a lot of other things happening. The boys basketball team will be in the state finals. And then we have our St. Patrick's Day parade. So there's a lot happening in Chestertown this weekend. And we're hoping people can stop by to see the show on Saturday in particular. Zach, who is playing our lead role / narrator, he's on the boys basketball team. So his games will be in the morning. So he'll be able to meet us in the afternoon to do the shows. No problem. We also have a couple cheerleaders, who are also playing leading roles here, who will also be involved in that. But like I said, we've really done our best to work around all that so the students can be involved in as many things as possible so they don't have to choose.
So that's kind of the situation in a small school district. You've got students, young people who have lots of interests, and that may include athletics and the arts and theater.
We like to joke sometimes we're all trying to borrow the same kids all the time.
Did you have trouble finding enough students for the show, given their other activities this spring? I know there are some schools that do struggle with getting boys interested in being in theater productions. What's it like at North Warren? Is the student body just a little more sort of gung-ho for helping out any way they can?
As far as getting male students to audition for the show, I haven't had too many issues with that. We do have a lot of guys in the high school who are either helping out with the crew or are in the show playing roles. And we also have a really strong core group of male junior high students who decided to do the show this year in both 7th and 8th grade. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of that is just trying to build it up each year. And I think the earlier I can get students involved, male or female, the longer they'll want to, you know, stick with the program and, you know, come back each year to try to do it. And as far as finding just students in general to audition for the show, we really didn't have much issue this year. The numbers we had last year are pretty similar to the numbers we had this year. So,
well, I'm looking at the cast list, and you're right. It's a big show. You have the main characters, and then you have the gangsters and the reporters and the guests, and that's a lot of folks.
Yeah, I do hold interest meetings at the beginning of every school year where I can kind of get an idea of what our numbers are going to look like. I ask mm-hmm. the students, are you interested in being in the cast or are you interested in being on the crew? And I make a list from there to kind of just get a rough idea of what our numbers are going to be looking like. That allows me to pick a show that's not only going to fit our numbers, but fits our students as well.
So as the musical director, you're saying, go team. I hope the boys basketball team prevails and wins, and also on with the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was somebody myself when I was a student who was involved in athletics and in the musical, amongst other things too. You know what I mean? I did everything that I could. And I think, you know, being on the other side of that now as their teacher, I want them to have, you know, the same opportunities that I had and the same ability to do as much as I possibly could. Because I really feel like at the end of the day, you know, with high school and junior high students, that's really what this is all about, is getting them exposed and involved in as much as possible. I'm in full support of Zach. And then we have Gabby Smith, who's playing the role of George. She's a cheerleader as well. Uh-huh. And Abigail Scorzelli, who's playing Kitty, who is also a cheerleader. I want them to be involved and successful in as much as possible. So
on the basketball court and on the stage. Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I said, I want them to do everything that they enjoy and be able to do it with, you know, as little conflicts as possible.
North Warren music teacher Andrew Puryear directs the Drowsy Chaperone Junior this weekend in the high school auditorium in Chestertown. Performances are Friday night at 7 and Saturday at 3:30 and 7:30. And one of the stars on the stage is also on the basketball team, playing in the boys' high school state championships in Glens Falls this weekend. Two of the women in the theatrical production are cheerleaders, also busy being at the game and in the play, and that's at North Warren High School in Chestertown this weekend. It's a busy weekend for lots of high school musicals. Want to let you know that in Saranac Lake, they're doing the Cole Porter Kiss Me Kate. That's their spring musical. Shows are Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, 7 p.m. at the Saranac Lake High School Auditorium. Kiss Me Kate in Saranac Lake.
So many events going on throughout the region, including at the Tannery Pond Community Center. The new exhibit features the work from the faculty at SUNY Adirondack. You can see folded paper from Jessica Erickson, also some of the prints from Kelly Brownlow Gerard. That's just opened yesterday at the Tannery Pond Community Center. And coming up on Friday, March 22nd, is the opening reception from 5 until 7 o'clock. You can find out more at TanneryPondCenter.org.
That's it for Northern Light on this Wednesday, March 13th.
Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then join us after that for the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock to get us caught up on all the morning's business news. Until tomorrow, I'm Monica Sandresky.
I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.